Morning, everyone. Today's daf in the Darim is daf mem. Big daf today coming up in the Masechta Bikur Cholim, which we started yesterday, which we're going to continue today, and also a lot of halachas mikvos. Not a lot, but enough definitely to keep us busy. We're going to start today on the bottom of Lamed Tes Amud Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lona Zeich Neshmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. So we're going to start again with the Gemara regarding Bikur Cholim. A reason why we got into this discussion of Bikur Cholim is because the Mishnah described a scenario in which a neder was made between two people, and the Mishnah described that a very abbreviated form of Bikur Cholim can be done. You don't want to get hana while doing the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, and so we discussed yesterday that you could do Bikur Cholim standing but not sitting, and then we made a distinction yesterday, why can you only stand and why can't you sit? So that goes back to Gemara, yesterday's Gemara. In the meantime, however, continuing Tanya Bikur Cholim in Lashir, and I know we did this yesterday, but just to start from the beginning of the sugya. So Bikur Cholim doesn't have a shir. Mayin Lashir, what does that mean? It doesn't have a shir. There's no prescribed amount. So Rav Yosef Lamemar and Shir Lamatan Tzchara. So Rav Yosef thought that the pshat is that you don't. There's no accounting for the reward that you're going to get for doing the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. So Amar Le Abaye, V'chol mitzvah miyish shir matan tzchara. So Abaye says to Rav Yosef, I don't understand. That's true by any mitzvah. Anytime you do a mitzvah, so we don't know the amount of reward that you're going to get. V'atanan Avizar b'mitzvah kala kebechamura. Mishnah Perkei Avos says that you have to be careful with all mitzvahs. The quote unquote light mitzvahs, the heavy mitzvahs, you have to be careful. Sheina tayotay matan tzchara mitzvahs, because you don't know how much reward you're going to get for doing a mitzvah. So Allah Amar Abaye said that can't be the pshat. So the Gemara is going to give a different pshat, two different pshatim. So Abaye says afilu gadol eitz katan. So one pshat is gadol eitz katan, meaning, right? The Ran over here doesn't comment, but the Mefarish says that gadol eitz katan means that you're an individual stature. The person who's sick is not an individual stature. Okay, so you'll say to yourself, let somebody else visit him. So that's the first pshat. Ein lashir means don't take into account that your person who has stature, the person who's sick doesn't have stature. You pay him a visit. Rav Amar afilu mea pa'amim bayom. Another possible explanation of Ein Lashir means you go 100 times over the course of a day. Meaning you visit him in the morning, okay, visit him again and again and again, and keep checking in on him and see how he's doing. Am Rabbi Acha bar Chanina kol mavaka chol anota acha mishishim b'tzaro. You visit somebody, you take away 60th of his illness. Now, there are two gerses in the Gemara. One we have in the Gemara is b'tzaro, and on the side, you'll say it says michal yo. So either from his pain or from the actual illness itself. So either the symptoms or the actual cause of the illness. So Amri Le Im Kain Leilin Shisim Look Me. So the Gemara says, really, you take away 60th? So perfect. So I have 60 people go in, and that's it, and we won't need doctors anymore. So Amri Le Isuraisa Debe Revi. So the Gemara says, no, that's not how it works. Isuraisa Debe Revi, we'll see in just a moment, that when we talk about fractions, what we're talking about is not a fraction of the original, but a fraction of the remainder. Ubeben Gilo. So in other words, it goes like this. Number one, when the Gemara's first point is that when you take a 60th, you take a 60th of whatever's remaining. So not of the original. So when the first person comes in, he takes away a 60th. The second person comes in, so he's taking away a 60th of whatever's remaining. So based on that schedule, you know, right, this is how fractions work. So you know you're never going to totally remove the illness. You'll give him some sort of relief from the illness, but you're never going to cure him totally just through the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. The Gemara says, and also another point to consider is that this only works ben gilo, that when the person comes in and visits him, according to the Ran, is born under the same mazel, or according to the Mefarish, it just simply means you're contemporaries with that person, right? In other words, you can connect, commiserate, so then you're going to be able to remove his 60th. By the way, the language of notel, it sounds like you're taking a 60th of the illness away, if that's true, it's a little bit strange. It comes out now that you did a mitzvah and you did a good thing, and you took away a 60th of his illness, but meaning you took it, you absorbed it yourself. But obviously, that's very difficult. It's hard to imagine that's what it means. And also, the Gemara is going to point out that we see this by fractions, specifically by Isuraisa Debe Rebbe. The Gemara is about to explain what that means. The Tanya. Rebbe Omer Basin Yisons Menichse Achen. Not Los Iser Nechasim. So we know the following. We learned that we did this back in Ksuvos, that when a girl gets married, so the father gives her a dowry. Now, how much does the father give for the dowry? So the Gemara says, whatever the father wants, and at the discretion of the father. Let's say there's no father, dad died, and he left an estate. So now the estate is given a suggested amount of how much to give for the daughter who's getting married. So for the daughter is getting married, so the suggested amount that the estate needs to give for the daughter is 10% of the estate. To which the Gemara says 10% of the estate, that's a lot. But more importantly, and more significantly, let's say you have 10 daughters. So that means then that there's nothing left in the estate. So now we're going to have to really what an absurd conclusion. Yeah, right. A guy dies, leaving 11 children. One of them is a boy, and 11 of them are girls. So because of the, I'm sorry, 10 of them are girls. Thank you. 10 of them are girls. So because of this, so now you're going to tell me that the entire estate is going to be given over to the girls, and the boy's going to get nothing. And we have a mitzvah of Yerusha, and the mitzvah of Yerusha demands that the son gets some money. And because of this takana of Rebbe, the girls are going to get nothing. So Amar Lahem, no, Rishana, no. Lasisa Nechas Mishneh, Bemesh Shaira, Shishas Bemesh Shaira, Vachosus Vachokos Beshava. So the Gemara says, no, that's not how it works. The way it works is the first one gets 10%, the next one gets 10% of the remainder, the next one gets 10% of the remainder. So it's the same schedule. In other words, it's not a fraction of the original, it's a fraction of the remainder. And then, by the way, you'll notice the last three words are v'chozes v'chokos b'shava. The Gemara Ksuva, this takes us back. The Gemara Ksuva says, let's say all 10 girls get married at the same time. So then what do you do? Well, you can't give each one 10% because then, once again, you go back to the original problem of you'll be exhausting the entire estate. So then what you do if they all want to get married at the same time is then you do a formula, which is what would have been had they got married successively, one after the other. So you get 10%, 10% of that, 10% of that. You figure out how much that would have depleted from the estate. You take that total number, and then you equitably divide that total number amongst the girls that are getting married. That's what the last three words, chozus v'cholkos b'shaveh.
If they don't marry at the same time,
so the first girl then gets more. Right. So correct.
Maybe the formula should be that they do.
I know it's nice. It's nice to think that things are always done equitably, but okay, doesn't work that way. correct.
But they only get until they become a bukeret.
No, this is dowry. Dowry is given at all times. Anytime a girl gets married, father is recommended to give a dowry. Make her more attractive for the marriage.
The 10%, if the state grows, like you give 10% state grows, is at the time?
Oh, I don't remember. A reasonable question. I don't know. I don't remember. Okay, Rav Chelbo Chalash. We go back to the halachas of Bikur Cholim. Rav Chelbo is sick. Nafak Achriz Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana makes an announcement. Rav Chelbo by Ish. Rav Chelbo is sick. Lo Ika Deka'asi. And nobody's coming and paying him a visit despite the fact that he's sick. What's the story behind the story? One can only speculate, but no one's paying him a visit. So Amaluhu Lo Kacha Yamaisa Batamadacha Mitami de Rabbi Akiva. So then, Rav Kahana is reminding everyone. Does everyone remember what happened with Rav Kahana? With Rabbi Akiva and the student of Rabbi Akiva, Shechala, that the student of Rabbi Akiva got sick. Lo nichnasu chachamim levakro. No one paid him a visit. Nichnas Rabbi Akiva levakro. Rabbi Akiva himself paid him a visit. Uvishvil shechibdo v'rivtzo lefanav chaya. And Rabbi Akiva took the broom and swept the floor and basically cleaned up the house and made it a much more clean or sterile environment. And made the patient feel much better, made the student feel much better. Amalei Rabbi Hechiasani. And the student said to Rabbi, Yehechiasani caused me to live. Yatz Rabbi Akiva Vadarish, Rabbi Akiva went out and explained to everyone. Kol Mishem Mevakar Chom Ki'ilu Shofech Damim. Not visiting the sick is like murder. Ki'as Rav Dima, the Gemara tells another story. Amr Kol Mevakar Zechol Agarm Lo Shiyichya. V'choshena Mevakar Zechol Agarm Lo Shiyamos. So if you visit the sick, you're going to cause him to live. And if you don't visit, you're going to cause him to die. To which the Gemara says, my grandma. Well, that's strange. Grama, you're causing? Elam akol mevaker zechola mevaker shalav rachamim shiyechiv v'chol she'im mevaker zechola mevaker shalav rachamim shiyamos. So the Gemara says, what do you think that means? Do you think it means that if you visit him, you're going to pray that he lives, and if you don't visit him, you're basically praying that he dies? So the Gemara says, shiyamos achadatcha? So the Gemara says, really? You think that's the pshat? Ela kol she'im mevaker chola ein mevaker shalav rachamim lo shiyechiv v'lo shiyamos. So the... So what it means is that if you don't visit him, you're not going to say anything. Meaning, by not visiting, it's just going to be neglect. You won't be davening at all. Not that he lives, not that he dies. In other words, you won't be davening bechlal. Okay.
Both of the above cases, it just mentioned that the Rebbe of the students saw no one was visiting and eventually went.
Yeah.
Doesn't that challenge the premise we had at the beginning that someone of stature doesn't take that into account. I mean, in both cases, it sounds like the Rebbe was holding off going,
right,
assuming
right.
the lower students.
Right, right. So, I guess the right. I don't know. Good point. Very good point. Okay, outcomes from this Gemara, a Ran, right? There are a number of Rans in this Masechta that are quote-unquote famous. Famous meaning whoever knows them. They're right, popular to those who know them. Anyway, so out from this Gemara comes a Ran, and the Ran makes the following comment over here. The Gemara says at the conclusion of the second story that when you go pay somebody a visit, so you're going to daven. Daven that he lived, daven that he died, but at least you'll daven. Whereas opposed to if you don't go visit him, so you don't know what's well about, so you're not going to say anything. So the Ran says over here, Nira Be'inai, it's the first Ran on the Amud. Nira Be'inai, Dahachi Kamer, Pam Mishatzarach Levach Rishrachim Emalachol Shiamus. The Ran says, I think it's appropriate, this is what the Gemara means. This is shot in the Gemara according to the Ran. That sometimes appropriate that when you see somebody and he's sick and he's not doing well, so you should daven that he dies. Kigon Shemitzdara Cholabechal Yoharbe. So the Ran over here limits. First of all, you have to see the person in a lot of pain. V'ef shelo shiyichya. And number two, says the Ran, it's got to be a terminal condition. So if he has a lot of pain and the condition is terminal, so the Ran says you should pray that he dies. Kedamrina beperkanos. And once again, we're going to remind ourselves of the Gemara and Ksuvos. We saw this at the very end of the Masechta. Dekem dechazay amte derebi dal kamazimna lebesa kisev anach tefillin vekametzdar amra yehi ratzon shiyichofa yonim esat tachtonim. Remember, the maidservant of Rebbe saw that Rebbe was suffering terribly, and the Chachamim were outside the house and they were davening that he should live. And Amti, the Rebbe, the maidservant, the Rebbe saw that he was in terrible pain, and so she said, Akash Baruch Hu, no, I want your, right, there was a, she commented how there was a fight over Rebbe. The Elyonim wanted Rebbe, the Tachtonim wanted Rebbe. So she said, originally her comment was, I hope the Tachtonim win. But then after seeing all the pain that Rebbe was going through, she then said, no, I want the Elyonim to win. And she says, Akash Baruch, you take him. Klamer delay was Rebbe. What she basically was saying was, I hope Rebbe dies. Umishum hachi kamer de mevaker cholam o'ilu betfilaso. Afilu lachiyos memnei sheyitfila yosem o'alas. So in other words, obviously, what you want in most cases is you go in there, and you see his condition, and you pray that he lives. That's what you want most of the time. But the Ran says, umishayna mevaker ain't sarach lamer sheyna mo'ala lachiyos. El afilu hechadi ika lehana b'misa. Afilu osa zutrasi yena ma'aneyu. And sometimes you're going to go in there and you see that again, he's terminal and is suffering terribly, so at least he'll give him a little comfort, a little benefit in praying that he die. So the Ran over here says that sometimes it's appropriate that the tefillah for the chola is not that he live, but rather that he die. Now in terms of whether this Ran is accepted la halacha, so this becomes a major debate. Rav Moshe and Tshuva writes that feels that the Ran is appropriate. The Tzitz Eliezer writes a very long piece where he thinks that the Ran is not la halacha. He makes a number of points. The Tzitz Eliezer, one of the points he makes a number of points. But one of the points he makes is that, first of all, this Ran is not brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Neither in the Rambam, neither in the Shulchan Aruch. So you don't see this anywhere in the poskim. And the second, he makes a lot of points. But the Tzitz Eliezer, one of the other points he makes is that in the story that the Ran brings down regarding Amsei the Rebbe, so there, the maidservant the Rebbe thought that he should die. But what were all the Chachamim thinking? They thought that he should live. So in other words, why side with Amsei the Rebbe? You should be siding with the Chachamim. So anyway, so the Tzitz Eliezer does not feel like this Ran should be accepted la halacha. In terms of halacha, obviously, you know, you speak to your Rav. You find out, you ask him what to do. Okay. The Gemara continues. Rav, you So Rav, the first day he got sick, he said, look, don't tell anybody. Right? Keep it a secret, because I don't want my mazel to be disturbed by people saying that I'm sick. And then after that, he says, okay, now go announce it to everybody. Then tell everyone that I'm sick. Because, look, as far as my enemies are concerned, I mean, the Gemara is just fascinating with the idea that Rav has got enemies. But okay, I'm sure, you know, in other words, to be a rav of a community means that you have to stand your ground, and sometimes you're not going to be friends with everyone. So he says, as far as my enemy is concerned, so they'll be happy for me that I'm sick. Uksiv, and I love it, he turns the negative into a positive. He says, and that's great. Meaning, Good, they should be happy that I'm sick. Because the Pasuk says, Ben Poli Vechal Tismach. Pasuk Mishlei says that when your enemies fall, so don't be happy, don't rejoice. And then Pasuk goes on, the Gemara doesn't quote the end of the Pasuk, but the Pasuk goes on to say that if your enemies do rejoice, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, so I'll be in your corner. So good. So Rava says, if my enemies start rejoicing over me being sick, so then that means I'm going to get more support by Kadosh Baruch Hu. V'derachem li by Eli rachmi. And Rava says, and those people who like me, so they're going to daven that I'm going to recover from my illness. Okay. I'm a Rav Kol Mavakar Zechol Anitzel Medina Shekhenim. Rav says that anyone who visits the sick is going to be saved from Gehenim. Shenemer Ashrei Maskil El Dal Bayom Ra'a Yimal Tehu. So once again, Pasuk in Tehillim over here describes that someone who goes to the Dal, we're going to describe in just a moment, the Dal being somebody who's sick. So on the day of Ra'a, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will save him. So Hashem... I'm sorry, Yimatei Hashem. Ein dal alachola. The word dal is a reference to someone who's sick. Shenemar madle yivatzeni. The Gemara quotes the pasuk in Yeshayahu describing how the word dala means sick. Inami min adin kara. The Gemara gives another pasuk. Maduata kacha dal ben melech baboker baboker. Okay, another pasuk describing the word dal in the context of someone being sick. Ein ra legehenim. The word ra is a reference to gehenim. Shenemar kol pala Hashem lamaneu v'gam rasha liyom ra'a. So the Rasha is looking forward to the, not looking forward, but anticipating the day of Ra'a, meaning the day that he goes to Gehenim. The im bikir maschara. So the Gemara says, now if you visit someone who's sick, what's the reward? So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Maschara kedamar. We just said. So nitzam edinah shel Gehenim. Ela maschara ba'olam hazeh. The Gemara assumes that not only going to get reward in the world to come, but you're also going to get reward in this world. In other words, the Gemara is assuming that this is one of the mitzvahs where you enjoy the peiros ba'olam hazeh, v'kem kayem eslolam haba. Okay, it's true in general with Chesed, but the Gemara wants to know specifically, what do you get in this world when you visit the sick? Hashem yishmerav yechayev va'osher ba'aretz va'altenel benefesh oyvav. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Tehillim, and the Gemara now is going to darshan each part of this pasuk. Hashem yishmerav me'yetzahara. So in this world, you're going to get extra protection from the yetzahara. V'yechayev min ha'yisorim. It's less suffering for you. Va'osher ba'aretz you hakol mischab nimbo. You'll be receiving honor. Va'al tenel benefesh oyvav shiyizdam lo re'im kina'aman sheripe etzaraso. And you're going to have good friends like Naaman, who helped him cure from his tzaras. Right? Naaman had tzaras. He went to the Navi. Elisha, right? Remember this episode? And Elisha told him to go bathe in the Yarden, in the Jordan River. And Naaman walked away thinking that was the silliest advice ever given to him. So he went back to his friends, and his friends now said, you know what? No, why don't you give it a try? And he went in and he was cured. And also another benefit in this world of visiting the sick is that you won't have friends like Rechavam who told him to divide the kingdom into two parts, which is what happened during the time of Rechavam, the son of Shlomo HaMelech. So the kingdom was divided into two, and that he'd done through the consultation of all of his advisors, not all of them actually, we'll see in just a moment, but anyway, the advisors told him to do that, and obviously that was the worst advice, and so good. So another fringe benefit of visiting the sick is that you'll have good friends who advise you well, and you won't have these kinds of friends who advise you poorly. Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer im yarmu lecha yaladim b'nei zekenim sesor shmala zekenim v'atishmala yaladim. So the Gemara, as long as we quoted the episode of Rechavam, so the Gemara just makes another comment, and that is that if the children are telling you to build, and the elders are telling you to destroy, listen to the elders and don't listen to the children. Shebinyan yaladim stira v'stira zekenim binyan. Because when children build, it's really destruction. And when the destruction of elders is really building. Meaning elders is wisdom, ancient wisdom. They know what they're doing. In other words, it's right when they say it's time to put it, time to take it down. So then it's time to take it down because they understand that it's ending and it really will be the foundation for a new building. Okay, v'simla davar Rechavam and Shlomo. And the Gemara says, and if you want a good way to remember this, so go to Rechavam. The episode with Rechavam in terms of the decision dividing the kingdom into the north and to the south. So the elders told them, don't do it. His younger advisors told him to do it. And so just it's a similar davar. helps us remember that we should be listening to the old advice, the sage advice. Even if the sage advice says destroy, that is better than the young advice that's given. Back to the mitzvah of Bikur Cholam. Amar of Shisha Bereder of Idil Olisad Inish Ketzira. A person should not go visit the sick. The words literally mean to support or to feed somebody who is short. Okay, it's an expression of the Gemara. It just simply means you shouldn't visit the sick, because again, the idea is that when you visit him, so you're sustaining him, could be literally feeding him, but okay, either way. Lo betlashai kadmasav, lo betlashas basraisa. Don't visit him in the first 3 hours of the day, and do not visit him in the last 3 hours of the day. Diyuma. Ki hechid olo leisech daim in rachame. Because what's going to end up happening is that you won't daven. You won't daven properly for him if you visit him the first 3 hours of the day or last 3 hours of the day. The Gemara goes on to explain it even more. Tlashai kan maisa rav chadaita. Because first 3 hours of the day, what happened? So the sick person had a full night's sleep. Okay, good night's sleep, I don't know, but he had a full night's sleep. And at least in the very morning, he looks pretty good. And so when you visit him in the morning, you won't be really getting a good appraisal of his condition because he looks pretty good in the early morning. So then you see him, you're like, hey, he's doing okay. All right, good. And you won't daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On the other hand, Basraisa takif cholshe. By the end of the day, right before he goes to bed, he looks terrible. He looks like a disaster. And then you're going to go in, and you're going to visit him, and you're going to think to yourself, this is ridiculous. This is totally hopeless. In fact, that's more or less the wording of the Ran. The Ran writes, V'kasavashu be'efes tikva. The Ran says it's like you have no hope whatsoever. Umiyaish min arachamim. Then you're going to be totally despaired. So you won't daven for him as well. And according to the Ran we saw earlier this morning, you're going to daven the opposite direction. Either way, so that's not the best time to visit him. Best time to visit him is during the middle of the day, where you're basically going to get a good assessment of how he's doing, and then you can daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he gets a refuah. The Torah brings down the Torah in the when he starts at the end of Yeridah, when he starts with the halachos of Bikur Cholim and Avelus. So basically, he's quoting the Ramban. The Ramban, not the Rambam. The Ramban wrote a halachic work on Bikur Cholim and on Avelus. It's called Torah Sa'adam. And so the Torah brings it down. And the Torah writes in the beginning, again, it's really the Ramban, it's really Torah Sa'adam. So the Torah writes in the beginning that there are basically two functions to Bikur Cholim. And that's based on the Gemaras that we saw so far this morning. Number one, the purpose of Bikur Cholim is to see how he's doing. In other words, to basically take care of his needs, like we saw with the story of Rabbi Akiva. In other words, you sweep in front of the person who's sick, and anything that he needs, you take care of. That is one purpose of Bikur Cholim. The other purpose of Bikur Cholim, writes the Torah, is that you daven for him. Davening for him is very critical. In fact, the Torah writes in the name of the Ramban that if you don't daven for him, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. Meaning davening is a critical component. We saw actually recently together, Dr. Zagi and I, we saw the Alka Yosef. He writes that that when you're davening for him and you're there and you're literally there in the room, so you should just daven. Don't mention the sick person by name, right? We find by Moshe Rabbeinu when he davened for his sister. So all he said was Kelna Rafan Allah. Right, you don't mention him by name. The minhag Yisrael, which is when you make a mishaberach in shul and you say the person, so you insert the person's name. But but when you're there in the room, there's no need to mention the person's name. He's right there, and as we'll learn in just a moment, the Shekhinah is right there as well, which makes it a very appropriate time to daven. So anyway, so there are two basic purposes to Bikur Cholim. Writes the Torah. Number one is to take care of his needs, and number two is to daven in his behalf, on his or her behalf. Back to the Gemara, Amarav and Amarav, Minayin Shekadosh Baruch Hu Zanes Achola. Kadosh Baruch Hu supports the person who's sick. Shenemar Hashem Yisadenu Al Eres Davai. While I'm on my bed of sorrow, Kadosh Baruch Hu supports me. He sustains me. And on top of that, the Shekhinah is directly above the person who's sick. Shenemar Hashem Yisadeni al eres davai. Tanya Mihachi, the Gemara quotes the Brisa supporting this idea as well. Somebody who goes and visits the sick should not be sitting on the bed and sitting on a bench, not sitting on a chair, but rather should be sitting on the floor, because the Shekhinah is right there. The Ron points out that there used to be the minhag was that the person who was sick was laid down on the floor. So that used to be the minhag. So in fact, the Ron writes, he writes that the minhag used to be that the chola was on the floor, and so now if you come into the room and you sit on a chair, on a bench, on a bed, so you're going to be above the shechina. Kaviyachol, to the best of our understanding, you're going to be above the shechina. So therefore, what you should do is you should be sitting on the floor, so you should not be above the shechina. But you know, the contemporary post can point out that nowadays we don't put the chola on the floor; we put the chola on a bed. So there's no problem nowadays with sitting on a chair, or you know, or on a bench, as the Gemara over here says. Well, no. The sitting and standing was only a function of the neder. The only reason why you didn't sit is because of the neder. Although it's interesting. No, you're making a good point, though. In other words, without the neder, so it sounds like from the Gemara over there that you could sit. But I guess the way you would say it is that you would sit on the floor. That's
that. Just get sit down.
Huh?
The person tells you to sit down because he thinks you're going
to leave. No, I understand that. But I guess sitting would mean sitting on the floor. I guess that's what the Gemara meant. Okay. Okay, we're not going to take a break from the daf, but we're going to take a break now from the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. We're going to come back tomorrow morning. We're going to come back to Bikur Cholim, and there are a couple more halachas that are going to be brought down in the Gemara regarding Bikur Cholim. We talked this morning about the two very basic functions of Bikur Cholim: take care of his needs, daven on his behalf, on her behalf, and a couple of other small halachas regarding the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, times to visit, and position where you should sit. Okay, these are some of the basic issues. There was an interesting run that we saw earlier this morning regarding the idea that under certain occasions and under certain circumstances one can daven that the chola die. Right, a very interesting run. The application of the run nowadays. So you speak to your local rav. But okay, a couple of basic ideas we saw. Okay, let us continue.
I'm sorry, it was just a quick statement.
Yeah.
Based on this gentleman said.
Yeah.
Rabbi Akiva realized the error of his ways when he went.
Yeah, right.
That's the point.
Right.
And then from that.
Right. I was wondering. I mean, you could speculate. In other words, the students didn't visit.
The evolution of understanding.
Yeah, the students didn't visit. I mean, was this the students that existed before? You know, of the 24,000, or was it after? I don't know. I was thinking about that, but it's speculation. I really don't know.
And if he realized, he didn't
know. Right. Could be. Could be. Okay. Amar Ravin Amar Rav. And so now the remainder of today's daf. Now you can turn the page and get a sneak preview of the five lines of Gemara that's on the Amud Beis. So we're almost done with the daf, but truth of the matter is that there's a lot coming up right now. We're going to take a detour. The reason why the Gemara is taking a detour, you know how this works. The Gemara quotes one statement in the name of Ravin Amar Rav, and the Gemara now is going to quote another statement having nothing to do with Bikur Cholim, having nothing to do with Nedarim. It's really a tangent, but it's a Sem Baal Memra, so the Gemara now is going to quote it. And so we're going to learn this morning, for the rest of today's daf, a little bit the halachas of Mikvaos. Actually, the truth of the matter is that this morning we're really going to be learning the halachas of Toveling in a River. Right, that's going to be the remainder of today's daf. So, not a lot of Gemara to do, but certainly a lot of ideas to speak out. Amarav and Amarav, Mitra b'marav, Sahada Rab Pras. So we start off with a statement by Rav, and that's the following. That if it rains in the west, now again, when we're learning the Bavli, so the west means Eretz Yisrael. So when it rains in the west, so a proof for that is going to be the increase in the river level of the Euphrates River. So in other words, now again, I'm not going to speak to the geography because raining in the west and Eretz Yisrael back then is not the same as Eretz Yisrael nowadays, and so I'm not going to speak geographically to the Gemara, right? But the basic idea, however, that's going to be laid out in the Gemara is the following. is that we know that the Euphrates is a low-lying area. We know that Eretz Yisrael is a higher elevated area. And so when it rains in Eretz Yisrael and the rain comes down the mountains, so some of that rain empties out into the Euphrates River. And so that means then that when you see that the Euphrates River is increased in size, the explanation of that increase is a direct result of the rain. That's the most important part in terms of understanding the Gemara. And practically speaking, what does that mean? So the Ran goes on to explain. Now, in order to understand this, so you need a little bit of introduction. So let me give a little bit of introduction, and then we'll go through some of the parts of the Ran. A person's tameh, so he needs a tahara, needs a tovel himself. So how do you get a tahara? So there's one of two ways that you can go into a body of water in order to receive a tahara. Number one, you can go into a mikvah. Now, probably that's the most popular because that's what we all do. Now, what is a mikvah? A mikvah is a collected body of rainwater, right? Rain comes down from the heavens and you make a pool in the ground. Pool, I don't mean that literally. I mean just simply a recess in the ground, a hole in the ground, a pit in the ground. Allow the rainwater to collect in that hole, and you tovel in that, and that is what's called the mikvah. In fact, the mikvah just means there it's standing water. It's just simply not in motion. It's not moving. In fact, the halach is that that's part of the definition of a mikvah. Mikvah has to be standing water. Flowing water does not work as a mikvah. The mikvah has to be stationary. It has to be a stationary body of collective rainwater. That is one way that a person can be matar himself. There's a second way a person can be matar himself, and that's through what's called a ma'ayan. Spring water, right? Spring water, or what we would call a river, some sort of flowing body of water. But in order for a mayan to be considered a mayan, it cannot be rainwater. A mayan has to be water that comes from the earth. In other words, a natural spring. A natural spring, the water comes from the earth, so that's another way that a person can be a matar himself. So what are some of the fundamental differences between mikvah and mayan? So there are a couple of basic differences between them. Number one, the flowing versus stationary. If it's a mikvah, so it has to be stationary water. If it's flowing mikvah water, that's no good. In other words, it's by definition, it's not mikvah. Mikvah by definition means it's a stationary body of water. So once the water starts flowing, it's no longer mikvah. So for whatever reason, let's say you have flowing rainwater, that doesn't provide a tahara. A person who tovels in flowing rainwater does not receive a tahara. The only way rainwater works is if it's a stationary body. As opposed to mayan, just the opposite. Mayan, by definition, is flowing. So the mayan is flowing, so you are going to go immerse in a spring, in a river, that is naturally flowing spring water. So that's good. In other words, that works. Another basic definition between mikvah and mayan is the amount of water that you need. When it comes to a mikvah, so a mikvah is only going to be a kosher mikvah if it has 40 sa'af, only has a certain amount. 40 sa'af translates into, I don't know how many gallons, you'll forgive me.
750.
How much?
750
gallons of water. It's basically the amount of water necessary so that your entire body emerges in that water at one time. However, when it comes to mayan, there's no halachas of arba'im sa'. There's no halacha. In other words, obviously, eventually you're going to need your whole body to get wet. But in other words, there's no halacha of mem sa', of 40 sa' of water. Okay, so those are some basic differences between mikveh and mayan. Okay, if you take a look at the Ran, I'm not going to go through the Ran. There's a lot of Ran on this Gemara coming up. But if you take a look at the Ran, inside over here, he quotes the Sifrei. Sifrei gives us the basic difference between the Mayan and the Mikvah, as I just articulated. Okay, now, basically, it comes out now as follows. If rainwater is in motion, it does not work to be Matahar a person. So now, you go to a river. Okay, actually coming up pretty soon. So I'm very fortunate. I take my family up to the south. I take my family up to the southeast. I know we're living in the south, but you know what I mean. We go to the states of Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and sometime in the middle of the summer, we go rafting down the river. Now, when is it going to be good rafting versus bad rafting? The answer is it's always good. it's never bad. But one of the things, however, that I've come to learn is that we look forward to the rain. Because if it rains during the summer, so that means that the river levels are higher, and so it's going to make my rafting much more enjoyable. Okay, good. That's wonderful. That's all important information. No, but what is important, however, is the idea that because of the rain, so now the rivers are going to go higher. That they're going to be the higher water levels because of the rain. In the world of Tahara, that's not good. Because if the majority of that flowing water down the river is as a result of the rain, that's not going to be matire. Because that's rainwater, that's zochlin, that's flowing, and therefore not going to be good for tahara. So what's the halacha? Like most times in halacha, it really depends on rov. It depends on the majority. If the majority of the river water is natural spring water coming from the earth, so then that would be fine. If the majority of that water is rainwater, so that would be no good. That's right now what is open for this discussion in the Gemara coming up. Meaning what we're going to be discussing in the Gemara from here until the end, which is only five lines of Amud Beis, and not even, we're going to be stopping at the two dots. So it's only three lines of Amud Beis, is basically, when can we assume that a river is going to be either natural spring water, which makes toveling in the river perfectly legitimate, or is it made up, is it constituted of the majority of rainwater, which means then that I can't tovel in the river. Okay, everyone understand? Mm-hmm. Okay, hopefully I set everything up well. And so let's see the Gemara once again. Amar Rav and Amar Rav, Mitra b'mar Rav, Asada Rav, Pras. So we start off with one statement of Rav, which is that if it rains in Eretz Yisrael, so that rain is going to flow down to the Euphrates, and the Euphrates will be now a composite of natural spring water and rainwater. And that is, for Tahara purposes, not good. Because now that means that there's a very good chance that the preponderance of water that's going in the Euphrates is rainwater, flowing rainwater, and that does not provide a Tahara. Upligi de Shmuel. Now this statement of Rav goes against Shmuel. Damar Shmuel, Nahara Mikipa Mizbarech. Shmuel makes a statement which is that whenever you have a river, even if the river is increased in size, so what is an explanation of that increase? It comes mikipe, from its bedrock, meaning that the additional flow is really as a result of the natural spring water. Meaning the first statement of Shmuel, I say first because there's a second coming up, the first statement of Shmuel is that even if it rains, and even if the rain is one of the reasons why there increase in the river, but it's only one of the reasons why. The Ron points out that that Shmuel operates with a statement that's made elsewhere in the Gemara in Tanis, that for every tefach of rainwater that comes down, two tefachim of water comes from the earth in order to greet it. So with a ratio of 1 to 2, so even when it rains and even when there's heavy rain, there's still going to be two tefachim for every tefach of rain of bedrock, meaning natural spring water, that's going to meet it. So according to the first statement of Shmuel, there never will be a problem toveling in a river. Period. Upligi de Shmuel de Shmuel. However, the Gemara points out that the first statement of Shmuel is going to be in contradiction to another statement of Shmuel. So I'll call this for the rest of this morning Shmuel 2.0. So upligi de Shmuel de Shmuel damer Shmuel einamayim metarim bezochlin. So he says that water is not going to provide a tahara when it's flowing. Ela pras biyume tishrei bilvad, except for the Euphrates River in the fall, in the month of Tishrei. Okay. The Ron over here goes on to explain. So let's just quickly summarize. First, we have a statement of Rav, which is that if it rains out in Eretz Yisrael, so Euphrates River is going to increase. And essentially now what Rav is saying is, you can't tovel in the Euphrates River. You can't get a tahara out of the Euphrates River, because it's now going to be mostly flowing rainwater. Shmuel's first statement is you can always tovel in the river, because for every tefach of rain that comes down, two tefachayim of spring water comes to greet it, and so therefore a river, flowing river, is always going to be okay. And the second statement of Shmuel says that the only time that you can go into the Euphrates River to tovel is only going to be in the month of Tishrei. The Ron explains that really contained in the Ron. By the way, I'm gonna just summarize the Ron. There's a lot of it, but the Ron says there are really two points in the statement of Shmuel 2.0. Number one, says the Ron, is that the Euphrates River is a prototype. Now, what do we see from the Euphrates River? Number one, the Euphrates River never stops. If you ever have a river that just stops, in other words, it stops flowing, it dries up, and then it restarts again, then you know that that river is rain-based river. And then you cannot use it, period. That's the first point that Shmuel 2.0 is making, is that that you have to have a constant flowing river. Now, if there is he goes on to quote a Mishnah in Paro, if, let's say, human intervention stops the river, so then obviously the river is not disqualified. But if the river on its own just dries up and then starts again, so that is evidence that this is a rain-based river, and you cannot use it for tahara. That's point number one of the Shmuel 2.0 statement. Point number two is that even if it's a free-flowing river and it never suffers a stoppage, even if that's true, still you have to know river levels. Meaning, because, right, in Shmuel 2.0, he doesn't agree with the first statement of Shmuel, even though I know they're both Shmuel. But he doesn't agree with the first statement of Shmuel. The first statement of Shmuel is that for every one tefach of rain, two tefachim of natural spring water comes to greet it. In the second statement of Shmuel, no. When you have rainwater, it's not greeted by spring water. And so therefore, if you have a river and there's rain and the rain comes into the river, so then you're going to have a problem with toveling in the river, because there's a good chance that the majority of that water is flowing rainwater and that doesn't provide a tahara. In the month of Tishrei, you're good. Because the month of Tishrei is the end of the summer. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't rain the entire summer. So now, you know that if you see a river in Tishrei, in Eretz Yisrael, or in Bavel for that matter, so you know that that is only spring water. It's not rainwater. And therefore, you can tovel. But the Ran goes on to point out, but if you know the river well, and it doesn't have to be Tishrei, it could be any other month of the year, and you know that the level of the river is the same as it has been, let's say, in the month of Tishrei, so then of course you could tovel in it. It doesn't mean that Tishrei is the only month that you can tovel in the river. It just simply means that, based on the seasons and based on the rain, you know that Tishrei is the safest month to tovel in the river. But the truth of the matter is that if you know your river levels well, you could tovel also in the other months as well, if it's flowing like it does in the month of Tishrei. That is the way the Ran understands the statement of Shmuel. But mind you, of course, that this statement of Shmuel doesn't agree with the first statement of Shmuel, because this statement of Shmuel says that when it rains, the rain is going to mix in with the Mayan, with the spring water, and under certain circumstances, disqualify it, the river. And then finally, just to wrap up, Avu d'Shmuel Avad Lohun Mikvos Labante B'Yumei Nisan Umavtze B'Yumei Tishrei. The father of Shmuel, so for his daughters, so basically they would alternate in the fall, so the daughters would go and tovel in the river. Okay, the Avu de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, would have his daughters toveling in the river, and he made mats for them when they toveled in the river. So why did he make mats for them? So the Ran gives two explanations. One explanation of the Ran is that they wouldn't step on the actual floor of the river, on the bed of the river, but he would step on the mats. The reason why is because if they sunk their foot into the floor, so then you're going to have the dirt of the floor get in between their toes, and that'll be a chatzitza. So if you put a mat on the bed of the river and they step on the mat, so now you know that there's not going to be a chatzitza. There's no dirt that's going to get between their toes. That's one explanation of the Ran. The second explanation of the Ran is that when they would tovel in the river, so mats over here means like screens. Basically, he would make screens around the area where they would tovel for purposes of privacy and sneis. Good. So that is what the girls would do, the daughters of Shmuel would do in the in Tishrei.
Doesn't that stop the flow?
No, the screens were just, no, they were just, no, they were not put in the river. And even if there's a small stoppage of the flow, meaning you're not going to stop it totally, and then in Nisan, so they can't tovel in the river, because Avu de Shmuel holds like Rav, and holds like Shmuel 2.0, that in the springtime, now you have all that rainwater mixed in with the spring water, and so now they can't use the Euphrates, so what do you do in the spring? So he built them a mikvah. So he had a mikvah in his house, and the daughters were told from the mikvah. Okay, so depending on the season, so that's where the daughters of Shmuel were tovel. In the fall, they were tovel out in the river, and in the springtime, they were tovel in the mikvah. Okay. Presumably. Okay, so Umafsi be Yom Tishrei. And where does all this end us? So first of all, it ends the daf. In other words, the next part will start tomorrow, which is a new sugyan. It brings us back to the mitzvah, to the halachas of Bikur Cholam. But in the meantime, in terms of this tangent of the Gemara, so now the basic question is, are you allowed to tovel in a river? Right? It's a simple question. So according to the first statement of Shmuel, the answer is yes. According to the second statement of Shmuel, according to Rav, and according to Avuah de Shmuel, it depends. It becomes then a seasonal issue. Meaning if you know that the river is just spring water, so then the answer would be yes. Anytime you have a legitimate concern that there's rainwater mixed in, the answer would be no. So where does Halacha stand? So that explains the remaining part of this run. The remaining part of this run, which I'm not going to go through, but in terms of discusses the Psak Halacha. Rabbeinu Tam, I'll give you the highlights. Rabbeinu Tam is Mekel like the first statement of Shmuel, and he allows Rabbeinu Tam allows you to tovel in any river any time of the year. It doesn't matter. So he's Mekel. And the Rif and Rabbeinu Chanan are Machmir, and they say that no, if you don't know the river and the river is flowing and anytime there's an increase in the river size, so you can't tovel in the river because of the rainwater that's there and the concern that the majority of it is rainwater and not flowing river water. And then the Rambam strikes some sort of compromise. The Rambam says that if you're at the base of the river, if you're at the point of origination of the river, so then you know that that is going to be mostly spring water. If you're at a further end of the river, literally the end of the river, so then there's a concern that that's rainwater and spring water, and so therefore that's going to be more of a problem. So okay, so the Rishonim debate exactly where we stand in terms of the halacha. Adkan, that takes us to the end of today's daf. Tomorrow we start at the two dots on Mem Amud Beis.